Let's open our Bibles to Judges chapter number 6, where we're going to start at verse 28 in this story of Gideon, the new judge for Israel. Now, he's a hesitant judge. He's the adult son of a man in Manasseh that seems to be in a leadership position. Seems to be fairly well-to-do, considering the circumstances of the time period. And his dad has a worship site for Baal and Asherah, right there on his own property, right near the headquarters for their little piece of the tribe of Manasseh. And so God sends an angel to recruit Gideon, to get rid of that pagan worship site right off the bat. That's step number one in becoming the judge of the Israeli people to kick the Midianites out. And it's a scary prospect for him to do this, because God wants him to chop down the Asherah and tear down the Baal altar, and then turn around and butcher his father's sacrificial animal that was for the worship of those pagan deities on a new altar right there next to the big building, and to use the Asherah wood to burn this sacrifice up in honor of the true and living God. Gideon is able to command 10 of his dad's servants to help him do this, but he can't bring himself to do it in daylight. He waits until it's the wee hours of the morning, and then he does all this activity where there's very few witnesses. So we're ready for what happens the next morning. Verse 28. When the men of the town rose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was broken down, and the Asherah beside it was cut down, and the second bull was offered on the altar that had been built. So they get up in the morning, and their worship site has been trashed, and the wood of the Asherah pole got turned into kindling to burn up their special prized bull for their worship ceremony. And it's all right there in the town center, I suppose. And it gets them upset. They said to one another, "Who's done this thing?" And so after they'd searched and inquired, remember, there's at least 10 witnesses to this, the 10 servants. One of them probably ratted him out. They ended up saying, "Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing," which is probably quite shocking to them, because Joash seems to be the bigwig of the area. So the men of the town said to Joash, "Bring out your son that he may die, for he's broken down the altar of Baal and cut down the Asherah beside it." Now, I don't know whether or not Joash had already had a conversation with his son by this moment, but he certainly processes very quickly the reality that a God who can't stop his altar from being torn down is not much of a God. And so Joash is already starting down the road of repentance from being involved in this type of worship. So Joash said to all who stood beside him, "Are you going to contend for Baal? That is, are you going to stand up for him and try to take his case on? Will you save him? Well, whoever contends for him shall be put to death by morning. If he's a god, let him contend for himself because his altar has been broken down. Now, the word that he repeats several times here is rub. Yerub. The idea of contending, to bring a lawsuit or to bring a complaint. And so that is why his words get turned around and applied as a nickname to Gideon. Therefore, on that day, Gideon was called Yerub-Baal. That is to say, let Baal contend against him because he broke down his altar. So let Baal stand up for himself. That becomes Gideon's nickname. Now, all this was happening in the time of harvest and grain processing just starting. So that was what Gideon was doing, remember? He was trying to covertly harvest and process some grain that he could squirrel away somewhere, secret away somewhere, so that they wouldn't starve to death during the winter months. And he was hiding because perhaps some of the Midianite scouts might be coming ahead of time and see any type of threshing going on and want to come and claim that grain for themselves. But the bulk of the force shows up after this story we just told. Verse 33. Now all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east, which I suspect are probably the Ammonites, maybe the Moabites, they all came together, so they're in a great big alliance. They crossed the Jordan and they camped in the valley of Jezreel. So that means that they are coming from the east and heading west. And they're probably just working their way across, collecting up all of the grain that the Israelites have already processed out of this breadbasket area that is the Jezreel Valley. And it is at this point that God takes a young man, probably in his later 30s, early 40s, from the Valley of Jezreel and turns him into the savior from this invasion party. Verse 34, but the spirit of he who is clothed Gideon. He sounded the trumpet, that's a mustering trumpet to call people out as the militia, and the Abrizites were called out to follow him. Now that's the closest group that he's related into. And then he sent messengers throughout all of Manasseh, that's his tribal group, and they too were called out to follow him. And he sent messengers to Asher, which is a neighboring tribe, Zebulun, which is a neighboring tribe, and Naphtali, which is a neighboring tribe. And all of those tribes are close to the Valley of Jezreel, which is where this massive raiding party is carrying out their collection. Verse 36. Then Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you've said, behold, I'm laying a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece alone and it's dry on the floor, on the ground around it, then I shall know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you've said. Now, a lot of times we refer to this as the source for putting out a fleece, asking God to give us a sign, to show us something. I understand that, but I want to point out that Gideon is acting in an immature and faithless way when he puts out his fleece. because God has already talked to him through an angel and apparently talked to him in other ways as well to tell him that that's his assignment. He's even given him supernatural sign already by having the lunch burned up by the angel's staff. So he is still feeling inadequate, uncertain, and nervous about it. And that's kind of a sign of immaturity. And so he asks for a sign, another sign. And this time he actually puts the sign out. He says, what I want is, I want this piece of fleece to be soaking wet, but I want the ground around it to be dry. Now, that's not normal. So he is asking for supernatural. Verse 38, so it was so. And when he rose early next morning, squeezed the fleece, he wrung enough dew from the fleece to fill a bowl with water. But of course, the ground around it was dry. Shouldn't have happened that way, but it did. Because God, in his kindness, provided him this miracle. So Gideon then said to God, let not your anger burn against me. Let me speak just once more. Please let me test just once more with the fleece. So he's still hesitant. He is still uncertain. He is still acting in an immature and lacking in faith way. Please let it be dry on the fleece only, but on all the ground let there be dew. So he says, let's reverse it. God did so that night. God is kind. He is merciful. He is understanding. And he wants to use Gideon. So he gives him the miracle he asked for. So God did it that night. It was dry on the fleece only, and on the ground there was dew. So that's three miracles that he's had already to show that he's the guy to get Israel saved from the Midianite invasion. Chapter 7. Then Yerubbaal, that is Gideon, and all the people who were with him rose early, and they encamped beside the spring of Harod. Now we know where the spring of Harod is. It's just a couple of miles to the north and east of the city of Jezreel, which is where the whole place gets its name. And that means it's only a few miles to the east of his hometown. So it's close by. And so they go down to this camp, or go down to this water site, and that's where they camp. Why there? It's because of where the Midianite camp is. The camp of Midian was north of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley, in the flatlands of the Jezreel Valley. Now, the hill of Moreh is, well, exactly what it describes here. It's a hill that rises up out of the flat area. It's got kind of three separate slopes on it, as far as I could tell when I was looking at it when we were there. It's just a couple of miles north of Jezreel, and so just a couple of miles away from where Gideon is camping. He who is said to Gideon, and this sounds like it's probably coming in some sort of supernatural communication, a voice in his head, a voice out of the air, whatever it is. He says, the people with you are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel boast over me, saying, my hand has saved me. So God says, Gideon, you got too many people here. I don't want them saying that they did it by their own strength. Verse 3, now therefore proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return home and hurry away from Mount Gilead. Now, Mount Gilead is like right there, just to the south of the waters of Harod. This is normal procedure for a militia anyway with the Israelis. They're supposed to declare anybody that's recently married, anybody that's recently planted vineyards, anybody that's recently built a house, you can be excused from militia duty. And then eventually they ask the question, is there anybody here that's terrified? Anybody here that's really scared? You are also excused. You may leave. Well, guess what? A whole bunch of them left. 22,000 people returned. Only 10,000 remained. So he had mustered 32,000 Israelis. But then he lost over two-thirds of them because they're scared. Then this happens, verse 4. He who has said to Gideon, the people are still too many. So 10,000 is still way too many. Now, the other groups got well over 40,000, I think. So God is saying, yeah, you got to get rid of more. So this is the way that you're going to get rid of them. Take them down to the water, that is the Harod stream, and I'll test them there for you. Anyone of whom I say to you, this one's going to go with you, shall go with you. And anyone of whom I say, this one's not going to go with you, shall not go. So he brought the people down to the water. And he who is said to Gideon, every man who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set by himself. Likewise, everyone who kneels down to drink. Now that's two groups. And it's better to explain it, I think, in this way. He is going to watch how everybody responds when he gives them a chance to get a water break. Now, I always picture him kind of jogging them down to the water so that they're thirsty. And then he says, all right, everybody, get yourself a drink. And he watches anybody that goes face down into the water without paying attention around them, they're on the out. They're going to be kicked off the team. It's the ones who kind of kneel down, scoop some water up in their hands, bring their hands to their mouth, and lick it up out of their hands. Because what's going on is, those people are keeping their eyes open. They're keeping watch on the horizon. So they are the most attentive of the bunch. And so by doing that, this is what we end up with. Verse 6, the number of those who lapped, putting their hands to their mouths. So that's how we know they scooped it up and brought it up to their mouth. Those that did that were 300. But all the rest of the people knelt down to drink water. So they went face down in. And he who is said to Gideon, with the 300 men who lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hand. Let all the others go, every man to his house. So we just lost another 9,700. Gone, just like that. So now we're down to 300 guys. So the people took the provisions in their hands and their trumpets. He sent all the rest of the Israelites, every man to his tent, but he retained the 300 men. And the camp of Midian was below them in the valley. Now, at this point, we know they moved. They left the waters of Harod. They went a little bit north, and they're probably sneaking around in the wee hours of the morning at this point. And they went around and got up on the slopes of the hill of Moreh, on the north side of the Midianite encampment. So they're looking down at the Midianite encampment from a higher position. That same night, he who is said to him, arise, go down against the camp, for I have given it into your hand. But if you are afraid to go down, go down to the camp with Pura, your servant, and you shall hear what they say, and then afterward your hand shall be strengthened to go down against the camp. So this is where we discover that Gideon is still a little bit nervous. I mean, he's only down to 300 guys. He started with tens of thousands of guys. And he's going against tens of thousands more of the other side. And so he is quite nervous still. And so God voluntarily gives him the option for another miracle. And this takes the form of overhearing what some of the pickets, that is the perimeter guards, are talking about. So he went down with Pura, his servant, to the outposts of the armed men who were in the camp. So he and Pura, I don't know if they combat crawl or they just kind of slink around in the dark from tree to tree until they're finally down to the perimeter guard on the north side of the Amalekite camp. So guys that are staying awake. And he listens in. And this is what he hears. Now, verse 12 says, "The Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east lay along the valley like locusts in abundance, and their camels were without number, as the sand that is on the seashore in abundance." They got to have a lot of camels because they're taking a lot of stuff back with them. "When Gideon came, behold, a man was telling a dream to his comrade." So this, when you're on guard duty, if you're close to another post, you end up talking. I've been on guard duty in the middle of the night, in the wee hours of the morning, and seldom was I close enough that I could talk, but every once in a while I could. And we'd talk back and forth. Because you're trying to stay awake. You're trying to stay alert, keeping an eye on the horizon. And so that's what these guys are doing. But they're talking about a dream that happened. It says, "Behold, I dreamed a dream. Behold, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian." So he has a dream, and in this dream, there's like a little barley loaf. I don't think of a loaf of bread like we have in modern times, unless you get the old-fashioned round loaves and things like that. Barley is the first grain of the harvest year. And so this barley bread comes rolling down the hill into the camp of Midian. Apparently it's a gigantic piece of barley bread. And it came to the tent and struck it so that it fell and turned it upside down so the tent fell flat. Now, that's a pretty scary dream. His comrade answered back, "There is no other than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God's given into his hand Midian and all the camp." So apparently, some of the spies of the Midianites have already heard that Gideon has been stirring things up in his little part of the Jezreel Valley. So they're aware that he's a little bit of a rabble-rouser. In fact, they may have heard through their spies that he'd gotten together a pretty good-sized force. And so these guys are now being plagued with dreams, scaring them that things are not going to go so swimmingly this time around when they're trying to collect up all their grain. Now, Gideon has just heard that, along with Pura. And so Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel, as soon as Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation, he worshiped. That is, he thanked God. And then he returned to the camp of Israel, up on the hill of Morah, up in the trees that are no doubt up on that hill. And he said to his men, "Arise, for he who is has given the host of Midian into your hand." And then he gives them their marching orders, their attack plan. He divided the 300 men into three companies. So three groups of 100. He's going to be in charge of one of them. I'm guessing he'll be in charge of the center one. And then he'll have two wing groups of 100 each under trustworthy individuals. And then he equipped them. He put trumpets into their hands. Trumpets are used for signaling. And they're particularly used to signal attack. You don't usually have trumpets in everyone's hand. There's a trumpet for each large unit to communicate to their people. So each sound of a trumpet represents a very large group. But they're going to mimic the idea of large groups here. Same thing with putting into their hands empty jars with torches inside the jars. Now, these empty jars are probably a mechanism of keeping the light low until it's needed. I think we've had examples from ancient societies where they have drilled holes in these jars. They've got little handles on them so that you can carry a lit torch, but it is low light. In our modern military, we use red light or subdued light of some sort in order to keep that sort of stuff from betraying our positions. That's what he's doing. But the next thing to remember is when an army is moving at night, not everybody has a torch. There's a torch for every smaller unit. And so they are going to mimic being a much larger unit. And so he said to them, "Look at me, do likewise. When I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. When I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me, then you blow the trumpets on every side in all the camp, and then I want you to shout for he who is and for Gideon." And so that is the attack plan. And the next time we get together, we'll see how it comes off.